Yes.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Thank you, Betsy.
All right. Sitting in the back row that has that little noisemaker thing. He's really every Thursday he's here making that noise with that thing.
When we had to talk to the whistler, we might have to talk to him if it. Thank you for listening to last Thursday's rebroadcast of a Sunday morning show. Extremely interesting. We had on last week and his book and all that. But we have a guest this week that was originally scheduled in April, and we had technical difficulties with Blog Talk Radio. And actually, we had technical difficulties with Blog Talk Radio for like 3 weeks, and then I was out for a couple weeks, and it was just the month of April was a lost cause. But the guest tonight, I got a hold of him and said we have technical difficulties. He was very understanding, very accommodating, and he said, "How about May 16th?" And I said, "Perfect." So it is now May 16th, and he is in the green room, ready to come on the show. So let's bring on Alfie from Dear Native Grapes. Hello, Alfie. How are you doing tonight? Welcome to All About
Wine.
Hey,
Ron. Yeah, how you doing? Thanks for
doing well. We tried to get you back on after the glitches we had. April was a bad month for us, so but we got you back here and got you on ready to talk about the winery and you and all that. Always like to start out with a guess of you telling me how you got to where you are, your history, and you can start back and, you know, your birth or whatever is convenient for you.
Absolutely. So farm and winery is called Dear Native Grapes, and that's D-E-A-R, kind of like a love letter, because we're trying to bring out all these heirloom American grape varieties that were either lost after Prohibition or forgotten about, and our whole project is centered around paying homage to our really diverse history of grape growing, especially in the Northeast in the 1800s, and kind of taking a look at all the stuff that we used to have that was really rich and really diverse in the region and that we kind of lost after that whole Prohibition era, and it never quite recovered. And so that's kind of the whole idea behind the project. And it's my wife, Deanna, and I. And we are located in Walton, New York, which is in the western foothills of the Catskills, Delaware County. And we kind of ended up here through a variety of different experiences that started kind of taking us towards wine and towards the idea of one day planting a vineyard and starting some kind of a farm project. I grew up in Mexico, in Mexico City. That's where my family's from and where they currently are. And my family, at least my grandmother, she was always a gardener and kind of taught me that passion for working with plants and being out in the garden. I always felt really happy while I was growing up and I was outside. Ended up in New York City, going to film school out of all things. my father was a man. He used to work in public media down in Mexico, and I was a kid, always loved to watch him work with the camera and be on film sets, stuff like that. And that's kind of what I wanted to be when I grew up. So that kind of took me to New York City to film school. And that's where I met Deanna, who was also studying film production. We both went to NYU. And during that time, we started dating and we eventually got married and we really started getting into natural wine and started tasting just some really unique wines from more obscure wine regions that we've never even heard of, from grapes that we've never even heard of. Made in just very simple kind of like, I guess, the way that wine used to be made back in the day, not a lot of intervention. And it kind of like piqued our interest and we were tasting stuff that was really unique and that had like a lot of personality. And a lot of it was centered around these like endemic grapes from those regions. And that's what kind of got us down this rabbit hole of asking ourselves about America's own grape history and native grapes. And as soon as we kind of found out the history of how we lost all these grape varieties after Prohibition, how there used to be a really large industry, especially in New York and the Northeast, that was kind of lost after that time, we were instantly hooked by that story. And I guess being filmmakers and we're kind of drawn to storytelling, we were immediately hooked onto that. And we were like, maybe we can do something with that, you know, and kind of try to tell that story. And that history is like, what is it that happened? What do we have today? Who is trying to revive those things in our grape and grape growing history? The years kind of went by. I used to talk to Deanna a lot about one day maybe planting a vineyard, and I would kind of complain about living in the city and not being able to, you know, have a garden. We had like this little balcony. It was packed with like tomato plants and like whatever pots we could fit in there. And Deanna's she's a New York City native. She's through and through. She grew up in Staten Island, Italian-American. Family, four generations in New York City. And she's a real planner and she has a really logistical brain, whereas I'm more of a dreamer, I guess, and just kind of stay in that. And so she was like, I'm tired of hearing you complain and just like talk about it. Why don't you get out there and start, you know, maybe go try to volunteer or apprentice somewhere or try to learn about grape growing, you know, you're just like reading books and just talking about it. And so she really pushed me to start doing that, start getting experience. That was a few years back. And simultaneously, we started really thinking about this idea of America's native grapes as a possible small farm business we could one day start. And so we took a bunch of small farm business planning courses through Cornell. Yeah, they had all these great online business planning courses, which were awesome because we got to actually, you know, kind of build out what this idea could be like. You know, this is something that we're both really passionate about, but like how can we turn something that like can actually, you know, one day sustain us, and at the same time, we're able to really explore this whole thing that makes us really happy and passionate. And so over the years, we kind of started forming that idea. We're saving as much as we could. until, you know, suddenly we were like, oh, we think we have, you know, maybe enough to put a down payment on some farmland somewhere. We didn't really know where that was going to be. I was, you know, maybe looking out west, and Deanna was not happy about that because, you know, her whole family's in New York City. You know, her mother was like having a heart attack almost.
You're going west.
Yep. And, you know, little by little, we kind of started exploring this native grape idea more seriously and just seeing how there are so many regions in the country that were growing a lot of these native or hybrid varieties that were just perfectly suited to growing in places like Missouri or places like Wisconsin or Virginia. And then kind of the Northeast started becoming more in focus for us because we didn't know much about grape growing or hybrid grapes or what possibilities there could be for actually growing good, for making wine and like growing grapes in the East, in the Northeast. Our idea was always like the dry climate of California. And like, but once we start really seeing that native grapes could be a great tool for growing grapes in these types of climates and in a place that was closer to home, it kind of opened a lot of possibilities and ideas. And we were like, what if we do this in New York? And, you know, this is where all of our friends are, our community is here, our support system is here. And so we slowly started thinking about that and started searching for farmland. We were looking primarily in the Hudson Valley, but pretty quickly we were kind of out from that. And there's not a lot of land access that was, you know, within our budget. We started looking further and further, and it wasn't until we kind of got to Delaware County where kind of the land prices per acre kind of got a little more reasonable. And it was kind of this 3-hour drive, like this 3-hour mark from New York City. I guess like it's a weird psychological thing, like a 2.5-hour drive from New York City and all the real estate prices are really high. But as soon as you get to the 3-hour mark, everything kind of just more reasonable. I don't know what it is. And so we found this little piece of farmland, like rolling hill, like it had the right exposure. It had all the things that we wanted and we thought we needed. And so we were able to buy our place in 2019, kind of towards the end of 2019, which in retrospect, we got really lucky because had we waited through the pandemic, who knows how the market or availability of our place would have looked like. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But we feel super fortunate to have landed here because it's a beautiful location. It's very scenic, rolling hills, a lot of farms around us. And so we decided to plant our vineyard in 2020. And with the help of family and friends who would come in small shifts, we would kind of, I guess, quarantine together during the lockdown and you know, plant vines for a couple of weeks. And then we would wait another couple of weeks, another shift would come of family and friends. And that's kind of how we ended up establishing the vineyard. We planted 5 acres that year of all hybrid varieties and a mix of more heirloom varieties like Delaware, which was a popular grape of the 1800s and is also still grown in some pockets of the Finger Lakes here and there. And then some of the newer hybrid varieties coming from university programs like University of Minnesota, because we knew that we were in this super harsh climate. We knew that, you know, everything was kind of stacked up against the success of these grapes. And so we were like, let's grow everything that we plant. Like, let's make sure it's like super hardy, that it's kind of as bulletproof as possible so that we don't, you know, kind of set ourselves up for failure. And what's cool is that, you know, we're 4 years, and and we're already kind of seeing, you know, which varieties are doing well, which varieties hold promise. And so just adding to that, we had the opportunity to make wine way sooner than we had thought. Our vineyard is in its fourth year, so maybe this year, if all goes well, if there are no crazy frosts this spring or anything like that, we might have a tiny harvest. But 2 years ago, we had the opportunity to work with a small organic vineyard in the Finger Lakes who had some of these really interesting heirloom varieties that we were researching and we were really curious about. And it's a small family-run place called Buzzard Crest Vineyards, and they're on Keuka Lake. Really beautiful little vineyard. And we were able to work with them a couple of years ago to make a little bit of wine from Delaware grapes, Catawba grapes, a rare variety called Isabella. And so it was kind of a cool, really fortuitous thing that happened in terms of finding the family and being able to kind of start learning what these older heirloom varieties have to tell, because there's so much that we don't know and there's so much unknown. And so to kind of long story short, the project Dear Native Grapes is kind of centered around that whole idea of trying to put a renewed appreciation on America's forgotten wine grapes. And so that's how we ended here.
All right. While you were going through the planning stages and all that, you both were working as photographers or filmmakers, or what were you doing?
Yeah. Yep. And we still do. We still have our day jobs, if you will. Yeah. Deanna, she's full time at a company. Thankfully, she's able to work remotely, and so she can do her work from our house. And then I'm a cameraman, and I travel. Most of my work is elsewhere, so I have to travel quite a bit. And so we're both trying to balance out that lifestyle and trying to figure out how we can make this small farm be more of a sustainable thing for our future and for our family someday, if you ever have kids and stuff like that. And so, we were hustling, it's fun, but it's
work,
a grind.
Yeah, it is. No question. It is work. excuse me. You were recommended to me by Stephen Castles, and, do you know Stephen?
Yeah, Steve is a great friend and mentor of ours.
Great.
He was pivotal in so many ways in our kind of our establishment and just in terms of finding a lot of these rare varieties. I listened to y'all's interview together and really enjoyed your conversation. And yeah, he's got this awesome vineyard of all these rare, almost nearly extinct American grape varieties over in Catskill, New York. And so he's been awesome in terms of learning and helping us learn about these varieties. He sent us so many cuttings of different kinds that we're currently propagating. And we're currently collaborating on a few wines that were made from grapes at his vineyard, and so we're excited about that.
Okay, he spoke very highly of you. You listened to the interview, you know that. Did you get your clippings, what you have now, from him, or did you source them from somebody local there?
What was your question? I'm sorry.
Did you get your clippings for your vineyard that you have now from him, or did you source them from someone local?
Oh yeah, we got a fair amount of cuttings from Steve, and propagating from cuttings, as you know, is very slow going process, especially.
Yeah.
But it takes so long, and a lot of these varieties are so, they're so when they're starting to put out roots, they're so delicate, and like our climate is so harsh. So we've had like a lot of trial and error, but you know, we're finally getting to a good spot with a lot of the propagation projects that we're doing. But it's just that whole propagation project is kind of more on the long-term side of the project, just because it's taking a while for them to get established. And then we got most of our grapevines from two different nurseries. One is called Double A Vineyards, and they're here in New York. We got a lot of our more heirloom varieties from them, especially the Delaware vines. And then we got a lot of the more contemporary hybrid varieties from a nursery in Vermont called Northeast Vine Supply. They're both awesome nurseries. Northeast Vine Supply, Northeastern Vine Supply. I apologize. They are working with all super cold hardy varieties, sort of like Northern latitudes. Really great stuff.
The vineyard you have now, you planted in 2019, 2020. You say it's about ready to give you some grapes, which should be. I mean, it's about that time. Where did you get those? Were those from the two you just mentioned?
Yep. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. We had a great experience working with both of those nurseries.
Okay. You are playing around with others, though. I mean, you are planting different ones that you got from Stephen and different strange heirlooms that you got, or do you have a plan to have a bunch of different native grapes? Are you going to limit yourself, or what is your foreseeable future on this?
Great question. We plan about, we have about 30 varieties right now going, some of them in larger quantities, others in very small quantities. Like we have some varieties that we only have like two vines of, you know, it's like so tiny that we have no idea like if we'll ever be able to make wine from that, you know, or like propagate enough. But honestly, those are the types of projects that excite us the most. We're super passionate about trying to experiment with the vines that we can get through the, you know, these nurseries that have like the cold hardy varieties. We're really into the idea of seeing, you know, in our very short season and in our climate that's very kind of extreme. We're here in the Catskills. We get blasted with all kinds of weather. But what really makes us excited is working with the really obscure varieties, the really rare varieties, and also the really experimental stuff that a lot of growers around the country are selecting and breeding from native grapes that we've never heard of or that we've never had a chance to ever taste wine from because it's just so new still. And once you kind of start looking at how diverse America's native grapes are, it's pretty wild and just how many species there are throughout the country and what each are adapted to, what the different climates each is adapted to. Like there's a native grape in Arizona, there's one in that's just native to the northern Ohio or Wisconsin area and Minnesota, and they're so nuanced and so different. And so it's really exciting to talk about the long-term future. And so we have varieties that were selected by grape growers that we're working with. One of them is a grape grower in Virginia named Cliff M. Yeah, he's kind of the Obi-Wan Kenobi of grape breeding. He's so cool and so knowledgeable. So happy to send cuttings of some of his experimental stuff. And he's working with a native grape species called Vitis aestivalis. And Vitis aestivalis is like, is more native to Virginia, primarily the Northeast, and it's one that there's not too much selecting or grape growing with it yet, but it's really balanced. It's in contrast to the native grape species Vitis labrusca, which is awesome and it's fun and it's kind of the grape species of the, you know, you eat a Vitis labrusca grape and you kind of think about, you know, being a kid eating grapes, you know, fresh grapes. It's like this quintessential, you know, Welch's juice flavor.
Right.
That's you know, it's awesome, but it's like very unique to that grape. Whereas Vitis aestivalis is really balanced and you know, some of these grape growers are able to do more with that in terms of you know, different flavors, stuff like that. Granted, I've only had the opportunity to taste one wine made from one of these varieties, like experimental varieties, just because there is, you know, it's so early in the process that you know, we've only been able to propagate maybe 20 of those vines, and so it'll be a while before we can really tell.
Are they cold hardy?
Yeah. They're doing pretty well here. Pretty disease resistant. They're a little bit early ripening, which can be concerning for our climate, just because we get all these spring frosts. So that's the thing to factor in. But you know, it's cool to see it growing. And we're working with a grape breeder in Ohio, and he's working with a native grape species called Vitis longii. And that's a really just obscure native grape, and it's like it's native to the Great Plains of the United States. And so it's like, it's really hardy, and it grows in like some, you know, kind of like basically the prairie, you know, and so it has its own traits and its own unique aspects, and so that's really cool too.
I've never heard of that one. Quite a few of them I have. I've never heard of that one.
It's crazy. Once you start getting into that rabbit hole, and there's a Google group. And it's all these grape breeders, and they're just nerding out about grape species. And I don't even participate just because I feel like I know nothing. they're just like nerding out so hard about all kinds of rare, obscure grape species, and it's kind of cool that how they're just like that.
It sounds like it. I mean, a bunch of questions here. First one, what is your growing season? From when to when? When do you get bud break? When do you harvest? A little synopsis of your season.
Yeah. So in the 4 years we've been here, we've experienced, it's a very, very short season. We get bud break about beginning of May, around May. We got bud break this year around May 4th. And last year we had a tiny bit of grapes that ripened. We got hit by this really bad frost that a lot of folks were impacted to last year around here in New York and Northeast. So it was kind of a wonky year, but some of the varieties still were able to produce a crop. And so we were picking grapes off of, I think, three or four varieties first week of October.
Oh, that's pretty late, though.
Yeah, we got kind of lucky there because usually around here the frost can come towards the end of September. The window is short.
Very
short.
Yeah, it's a short season. Your summer days are what's your range? I mean, how hot does it get and how cold does it get in the middle of summer?
it can get pretty, it can get steamy, although we're up in the mountains, kind of a alpine setting. It's about 1600 feet in elevation.
You're up.
We're up on a ridge, on a ridge top, and we're kind of tucked in a, I guess, mountain hollow. The ridge is kind of exposed, and so it does get quite a bit of weather moving through. We like to think that it also has good airflow because there's constant breeze, constant wind there on our site. It's a pretty windy site. And so the Catskills can get kind of hot maybe towards the end of July or August, but it's pretty moderate. It's kind of nice. It's, you know, we don't have to bring in the air conditioner till maybe the last week of maybe middle of August. We'll start putting the air conditioner on.
Wow.
Otherwise the nights are really nice and cool because of the hills or the mountains kind of keep that cool weather.
You have any water, lake, river influence?
We don't where we are.
Okay.
Which I think might make our site even more harsh. You know, we go to the Finger Lakes to visit some of our colleagues or the farm that we were working with, the vineyard that we're working with up there. And it's so different climate compares from the Finger Lakes to the Catskills. It's almost like it feels almost tropical in the Finger Lakes sometimes.
Wow. How far away? What distance are you looking at?
It's about a 2.5-3 hour drive.
Okay.
Yeah, but the lakes just kind of have this awesome microclimate up there, so it makes sense, you know, that the grape growing is all happening there.
Yeah. And then in the winter, snow and cold. How cold? I mean, you know, these grapevines are exposed to a lot of torture in that. How cold does it get?
Yeah, it can get pretty cold. This winter was pretty mild. We barely had it, really. But the first year we moved here, we had a lot of snow. We had about we had one day with about 3 feet of snow, and we were like, oh no, what did we do? Where did we move to? We didn't even have a snowblower at the time. And, you know, we've seen it go down to negative 15, negative 18 in the middle of the winter there. You know, we're growing all stuff that supposedly is pretty hardy. Probably, you know, most of the varieties we have are hardy up to negative 20. Some of them supposedly they're hardy up to negative 30. Mm. We're not too concerned about the middle of the winter. We're concerned about the spring in the last few years and how, you know, you get these spells of these really hot weather days and suddenly it boom drops. And so that's kind of more concerning to us right now.
Yeah, the late frost will do you. And I suppose too that you're pretty much insulated from really severe weather, so the grapes aren't. And the reason I ask that is because lately I've been reading a lot of stuff about hailstorms hitting the Bordeaux and Chablis regions of France and you know, the wildfires and everything. You guys seem to be in an area which you're pretty much insulated from some of that.
Yeah, I mean, we get a lot of stuff. We get a lot of experience. Weather. But at least, you know, we're lucky, I guess, that we don't have the threat of wildfire like so many other folks have out west or parts of Canada, I guess, too. But we've had quite a bit of extreme weather here too. We have a lot of this area has a lot of history of flooding as well. There's just so much water here, which is a blessing. But at the same time, it can be pretty extreme.
You, You're flooding. So you are you anywhere near water that could flood you?
So we didn't experience the big flood of the last big flood was in 2006. And that caused a significant amount of damage in our region. The rainfall was so extreme and prolonged. It just blew up all the culverts and pipes, and all the roads were washed out. Fields were flooded. Yeah, it was, you know, we've seen photos of it, and it was, and they've done a lot of flood mitigation in our area, but, you know, our field is in a, slope. But you know, I can't really like what that quantity of rain would do anywhere, you know? So,
Well, Afghanistan over the last, two or three weeks, they've had that type of rains there. There's been, I just read something today, like 300 people have died from floods in Afghanistan because of the torrential rains there. So, you know, it's hard to imagine.
So,
how many acres do you have planted total, in what? I mean, you say you have two plants of this and two rows of that, but how many total acres do you have?
Yeah, so we have about 7 acres under vine.
Seven. That's quite a bit there.
And
it's just, what is your most common one that you have right now?
We have two different varieties of Frontenac, which is a Minnesota grape. We have Frontenac Blanc, which is a more of a newer release by I want to say it's University of Minnesota, but I might be mistaken.
They came out with the Frontenac,
So they have Frontenac Blanc. We have Frontenac Noir. Both of them are doing really well. They're extremely vigorous. They're kind of no problems there. Like we're pretty happy with those. And then we have two varieties from also a grower out in Minnesota named Tom Plocker. And the varieties are Crimson Pearl and Petite Pearl. Those are red varieties. They're awesome. Like last year we were so busy. We were planting another acre of vines last summer, and we barely had time to tend to the whole other part of the vineyard that was just left. Because it's really just Deanna and I, and like we sometimes convince our friends to come out and do farm work with us. but we kind of left most of our vineyard unattended last summer, and we had a really wet summer. There's a couple of varieties that were really suffering from disease pressure, but the Petite Pearl and the Crimson Pearl were basically untouched. It was kind of cool to see just how extreme the difference was in some of the varieties. And what's cool about the Crimson Pearl is that it's a late budding variety, but it's early ripening. And so
Kind
of the sweet spot that we're for here.
Big berries, small,
they're kind of small.
Okay.
So far we haven't Crimson Pearl grapes yet. We had Petite Pearl, which is maybe a week, supposedly ripens a week or so after the Crimson Pearl. And there were really beautiful grapes. Small clusters, kind of grenade sized clusters, really tight. Kind of a cool, promising variety here. So we're keeping a close eye on those two.
You say really tight clusters. Any concern about mildew?
Yeah. But we didn't see any. So, we'll keep keeping an eye on that. And then we have Marquette, also Minnesota grape. We have a lot of Delaware, which is a grape that we really love. We had the opportunity to work with Delaware grapes from Buzzard Crest Vineyards in Onchuca Lake, the farm we work with. And so beautiful. It's such a balanced grape. It's a bit, you know, from the Vitis labrusca family, but it's just, it was awesome to be able to make wine with it. And it also, tends to ripen early. And so we were like, you know, we're trying to bring renewed appreciation to the American heirloom grapes. This is a perfect grape for, you know, potentially perfect grape for our area. 'Cause you know, it can ripen early. But it is a pretty low vigor vine compared to the Minnesota wines that are kind of, already monstrous in size. They're super vigorous, whereas the Delaware is kind of taking its time. But you know, it's coming along. We planted another acre of Delaware last summer.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And recently, well, last year, we learned that there is not that much acreage of Delaware left in the United States. We were chatting with a Cornell viticulture specialist, and they were saying that there's only about 30 acres of Delaware left.
In the States?
In
really?
York.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if it's in the U.S., but I know that it's in New York, at least. It's only about 30 acres. That's
getting down there. Yeah.
State. Yeah. And so we were like, let's plant another acre of it and you know, see what happens. So those are all budding out and coming along pretty well.
Native American grapes are still in the ugly redhead stepsister category among growers of Vitis vinifera. How have you talked to any vinifera growers around the area, and what is their opinion of what you're doing?
Yeah. So what was the category you mentioned?
It was Vitis vinifera. The main grapes that are growing, the cabs and the Chardonnays and recent, all that good stuff. Have you talked to any growers of those, and what is their opinion of you growing Native American grapes?
Yeah, totally. We love Vitis vinifera, don't get me wrong. We love a good cab and a good Pinot Noir, and so we think that any diverse ecosystem, there is a place for everything, and we believe that the more variety, the more diversity in something, the better, especially if it's something that's local, if it's something that is from here, and that's what kind of, you know, really makes us excited. We've definitely had folks that, you know, kind of like, oh, you can't grow grapes in the Catskills. And we're like, well, you should come by and take a look. And they're like, oh no, you can't grow grapes there. Or yeah, at least you can't grow like good wine grapes in there. And we're like, well, you know, there is just not as much, knowledge about what's out there, and like some of these, like we see them as like great tools in the toolbox for really pushing the boundaries of where you can grow something that doesn't require, like here in the Northeast, our disease pressure is much higher than California and than the West, where they really don't have a lot of problems with disease pressure compared to what we have here. And so if you can grow something that can be easily grown here, and that can be grown maybe organically, that can be grown without much effort, that can be grown without a lot of chemicals or herbicides or pesticides, that's awesome to us, you know, and we're like, you know, that's a huge part of what we are trying to, of the conversations that we're trying to have with people. It's like some of these grapes are just a way to maybe think about the way that we are farming and the way that, you know, wine is a agricultural product in the end, really, because, you know, the grape comes from the land. And like, if we're able to treat our soils and work with our land in a holistic way, because we're growing something that can grow naturally here, you know, that's really cool. And yeah, we have a lot of friends who grow vinifera, mainly in the Finger Lakes region, and they're doing a great job. We have friends who have suffered a lot of heartbreak with their vinifera in the Northeast. And so, yeah, you know, we
heartbreak.
But you know, it's whatever works. You know, if you love something, go for it. You know, so we encourage, you know, all experimentation and push boundaries if you can.
You mentioned something that I wanted to ask about, but since you mentioned it, brought it to my mind again. Organic and biodynamic. Are you looking at doing organic farming, biodynamic farming? I know that, well, the ones you're using now from Buzzard Crest are organic, but are you looking at doing that for the vineyard, or what's your plan on that?
So we have adopted different learnings and different facets of all those disciplines of organic, biodynamic, holistic, to what has kind of made sense for us here and what we have available in terms of materials, in terms of herbs that are growing on the farm that we can use for our spray program, that we can kind of adapt. So we've taken parts of different of these different fields, I guess, of grape growing. Like, one thing we know for sure is that we won't use herbicides, we won't use pesticides, we won't use fungicides. And so we look for the ways that we can manage the grapes by taking the things that make the most sense to us from, say, biodynamic. Like, we take, we don't have access to a lot of cow manure, for example, or horse manure, and so we can't do some of the preps, for example. Or, you know, if we could have access, it would take like a lot of resources from that, and so we look at other aspects of it. For example, using herbs like yarrow, some aspects of biodynamic also use horsetail, for example, which also grows right naturally here on our farm and has like a lot of silica, and that increases the immune response in the plant. And so it's kind of a work in progress. And something that we are constantly trying to figure out and learn. But I think a huge part of it too is selecting the grapes that will allow us to be able to carry that out. And so if we see that it's a variety that is just having way too much trouble and can only really be grown in a way that's more intensive, that we just don't have the resources for or the appetite to do it, like, we're not going to stress out too much about it. And, you know, we might not grow much more of that. There's a great variety that we are growing called Itasca. And it's a newer grape variety from also Minnesota that it's just, unfortunately, it's not doing great here. It's just more prone to disease, even though it's supposedly not. Maybe it's just our site, you know, maybe it's just the way that we've managed it that is just not working out. But literally right that row is a row of Petit Pearl, and that's completely intact. And so it's kind of a crazy thing to look at just side by side. And so I guess part of this whole thing is experimenting and really taking our time to observe, even though I'm more impatient. Deanna's like, don't worry, just let's just see what happens and like observe the plants and kind of take notes as much as we can. We really like the work of an orchardist from New Hampshire named Michael Phillips. And he, for many, many years, researched and wrote books surrounding the work he did in his orchard in New Hampshire. A lot of it from different philosophies of biodynamics and organic growing, but kind of taking it one step further in the sense that like everything that we put into our vineyard is also feeding the rest of the ecosystem there. And so a lot of the spray recipes and the herbs that he uses for brewing different herbal sprays and stuff like that, like is based on things that are growing on the farm that kind of makes sense. And we really liked those philosophies, even though a lot of it in his writing is geared towards apples. A lot of it just makes sense to us. And so we've been trying to figure out how we can kind of adapt that more towards grapes. But it's essentially trying to feed the soil and feed the microorganisms that just are going to be the grapes' ultimate like immune response to anything that's happening throughout the season. But yeah, it's all a work in progress. Yeah.
Very good. Well, there's so many disciplines out there. I mean, you can, you know, as far as grape growing and all that, regenerative and organic and the biodynamic and sustainable. And there's just so many different disciplines out there that you can go with. And you're early enough in the vineyard and you're early enough in the farm that you can incorporate just about anything you want now. You mentioned early that you had grapevine that you had tomato vines on the porch. Have you transferred all those out? Do you have yourself a little garden with tomatoes and everything else there?
We do. And we have been so swamped that we literally just look out the window at our veggie beds. We have 6 veggie beds and it's just, we haven't been able to get out there this spring, but we have all our seedlings in our laundry room growing under grow lights, and they're all getting really big. And we're just kind of every day, and we're like, oh my God, we're like, we got to get out there. So we have to schedule it out, really. That's what we have to do.
Time to invite friends up for weekend barbecue and then plant your gardens. That's it.
Yes, there you go.
Bribe with wine. You have 3 products on your site, your website. One of them, the Cayuga White, I noticed is sold out. But that is, do you bottle these? I noticed this is from Buzzard Crest. But did you bottle these? Are you working with Buzzard Crest on these?
So we bought grapes from Buzzard Crest the last 3 years. 2021 was our first. And so we bring grapes from their vineyard down to our farm. We crush the grapes here. We ferment everything here at our place. Barrel here, yep. We've been basically working out of our garage for the last 3 years. We literally can't fit any more wine in there. It's just like packed to the gills. it's been a good experience though. We now know that, you know, it takes a lot of effort.
Well, yeah, there's another weekend you need to have a barbecue and bring all the friends up for a barn raising so you can have a place to do your fermentation.
That sounds great. That's a great idea.
So you're doing your own crush and modeling there. Are you looking at doing oak or anything? Or are you what is your plans for this? I mean, obviously you will be growing, I'm sure. maybe not in the foreseeable future, but probably faster than what you think you will. What are your plans? You're going to go oak on these different ones? I mean, Native American grapes, do they take to oak well? Is it best just to use them fresh? Are they ageable? A little bit about that.
Yeah, great question. The three wines we had for our 2022 vintage were all aged in oak for about a year. The Cayuga, we aged it in American oak, neutral American oak. We get all our barrels from our friend Colin, who has a small company up in the Finger Lakes called Finger Lakes Barrel Supply. And so he gets all of these really great barrels from California wineries that just use them once, and like they get all that, you know, buttery, oaky flavor. And so then they discard them, and Colin gets them, refurbishes them. They're super clean, and all that oakiness has gone away. And so we like that, because then it's kind of a more neutral,
flavors,
you know, flavor. And so we have all neutral oak. We have some American oak barrels that we age the Cayuga white in, and then the Niagara and the Isabella were aged in neutral French oak.
Oh, okay. So you're going to does Native American grapes take to oak well? I mean, does it enhance the flavor, or does it change it?
Yeah. What? Yeah. So we made wine from this kind of rare variety called Isabella. And Isabella's kind of cool. It's got this really great history. It was really popular in New York City, in Brooklyn, particularly in the 1850s around there. Basically gone, disappeared from the United States, aside from a few plantings here and there. But it's really popular in some European countries where it's grown in secret, just because of regulations over there, they can't really grow American varieties. But
right.
A lot of farmers still love it and love making wine from it. And so it's grown in secret in some European countries like Doris Islands or even France and Italy, but it's under different pseudonyms. And so they call it differently, different names. It's kind of a weird. But we made wine from Isabella in 2021 for the first time. And we had it in a stainless steel vessel. And it was, it tasted so bad. And I was out. I was like ready to dump it. And Deanna, again, was like, be patient. We ended up transferring it to a neutral French oak barrel and forgot about it 7 months or 8 months and came back to it. And it was just like, just so lovely, like floral, just delicate, like just, it was crazy how much it changed. And we left part of the other portion of that wine we made. We left it in this stainless steel barrel, and it was still that, and the stainless steel was still bad. It was still, it still had that taste. And so, yeah, we've had this conversation with a couple friends who work with Vitis Labrusca varieties, and they have kind of shared that the Vitis Labrusca really does well exposed to a little bit of oxygen more than other varieties. And so who knows, it might be because of that. And so we try to see kind of what, you know, barrel aging can do. Right now we have two barrels of a Concord aging that we're thinking of just leaving in the barrels for like 2 years and like see what happens, you know, like feel like no one treats Concord with that, you know, that it doesn't get the respect, you know, it could potentially have. So we're like, oh, let's just put in French oak barrels and see what happens and come back
to
it.
There. Yeah. Well, so oak really does make a difference, it seems. It, you know.
Yeah.
Who would know?
Wheat.
That's odd. You, how many acres do you own there at the ranch or at the farm?
We have 44 acres.
Oh, wow.
And seven acres planted.
Is all 44 cleared or not?
It is mostly pasture. We have a little bit of woodland. We're kind of right up against a nature conservancy preserve, and so it's, you know, we're right up against the woods, which also has its ups and downs. The downs is we get a ton of deer pressure, and the wildlife is, you know, we have tons of wildlife, but like the deer are just, you know, our big project down here. We're gonna put deer fence because we've tried everything, every trick, everything that was available to us within our budget, and nothing has worked. We've endured extensive damage to our vineyard, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I heard something once which you might find distressing, actually, but there are more white-tailed deer in the United States now than there was when the Pilgrims landed. I mean, they're everywhere. And
I see it.
You probably are well aware of that. And most of them are on your farm, eating your grapes.
Yeah.
So expansion may be in the future, but right now you need to be sure you keep the grapes you're growing.
Yep, exactly. I think we're taking a break from planting more vines. We're going to take care of what we have now, kind of try to learn as much from each variety, and kind of take it from there.
You know, the deer come in and go, "Oh, look at this, grapes that our grandparents used to tell us about. We can eat these," you know, and so. Mike, do you have any questions or any comments?
I do not. I was checking the screens also just to see if anybody was jumping in there, but nope. No questions here. I appreciate it. And thank you very much. It's been very interesting talking to you or listening to you too.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Your last name, Alcantara?
You got it.
Oh, how about that? Before we leave, give us your website, your email address, your phone if you want to, your Facebook, everything. So in case anybody wants to get a hold of you, they can. Or if anybody has any questions about Native American grapes, I'm sure you would love to give them the answers that you know. So give us all that information.
Absolutely. So our website is DearNativeGrapes.com, and that's deer like a love letter, D-E-A-R. We're on Instagram as well, DearNativeGrapes. And our contact is on our website. Feel free to reach out for any questions. We're going to be releasing our two summer wines in a few days. They're both sparkling. One of them is made from a grape variety called Delaware, and another one's made from a grape variety called Catawba. And we're very excited for those. They're super fun, summery, dangerous in the sense that they're just, you can really have a nice cold glass and you're ready for another one. So we're excited for that. Feel free to contact us, and we love chatting with folks about our projects and native grapes in general.
Do you say the two ones you're coming out with are going to be effervescent, going to be sparkly?
Yeah, they're both sparkling.
Wow. Oh, wow. Well, that's a project in itself to get those bottled and put together. So.
Yeah. Yep.
You guys are looking at expanding into very difficult ways there. So Alfie, thank you so much for taking the time talking to us tonight about American Native American grapes. That it was extremely interesting, and about, you know, your story and the farm and all that stuff. It was fantastic, and we wish the best of luck to you and what you're doing up there. And maybe sometime in a couple years we can get together again and see how things are going and see what you're growing and making wine from at that time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ron, for having me, and thank you for everything you do. Your show is a great resource, it's really invaluable.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And best of luck to you, and we'll seriously talk in a couple of years.
Sounds good.
Okay. Good night now.
Good night. All righty. Very interesting.
Yeah, we'll make a note. Very serious about that. We'll make a note and see. Call him back in a couple of years and see how he's doing. Because he's putting so many different clippings in the ground. It could be very interesting what he's coming up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, he definitely has the room out there for it. So
he does. Yeah. Happens. The knowledge, you know, he's mm-hmm. and his wife really put it together, and mm-hmm. the knowledge of what they're doing, and mm-hmm. you know, keeping their daytime job too. That has to be quite a chore to do a 40-hour week or whatever they end up doing, and then try to take care of the grapes and all that stuff there. So, you know, more power to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Well, we are at 8:07
p.m. Oh, wait a minute.
PM.
Got an announcement.
And Ron has an announcement.
I have an announcement here. I just remembered. Let's see. Bottle Rock 2024. It's in Napa Valley. It's Bottle Rock, Napa Valley. Them acts, they have acts there. World-class music destination. If you like crowds, here you go. 120,000 attendees over the holiday weekend. It's a festival. It is an expo. It is all sorts of stuff. It's really quite a thing there in Napa. So if you are in that part of the country, then you've got this. Bottle Rock buses run daily, so you can, you know, go out of San Francisco or San Jose or Oakland, any of those. Carpooling is available. You just, you know, let people know you can carpool. Bicycles, the Amtrak train takes you up there. There's a lot of airports that land in the San Francisco and Oakland areas, even a little further south, Sacramento and Santa Rosa and stuff like that, San Jose. Hotels are available all over the place. The festival itself, this year they've got Stevie Nicks, Ed Sheeran, Pearl Jam, Mana, plus 75 other musical acts. Those are just the big names that I mentioned there. So it's quite an event. It's a festival outside, and what I've seen on the weather is supposed to be good this weekend there. So is it this weekend? I'm sitting there talking about this weekend. I think it is. Well, let me click on this other one here. It tells me the weekend, the times. May 24th to 26th, so not this weekend, next weekend. So we get time to get out there. Let's see, the acts, the headliner acts on this side here is Stevie Nicks, Ed Sheeran, Pearl Jam, Dominic Fike, I think. And he's Florida-born boy, I didn't know that. The Beaches, Holly Humberstone, Norah Jones, All Time Low, And those are the ones they listed here as headliners. So, quite an event up there, out there in Napa Valley this weekend. So, or next weekend. So, if you are so inclined or in that area, Bottle Rock 2024. It's a wine country rock and roll festival and eating and drinking, and a good time will be had by all. So I'm going to get that. This is situated on a 26-acre expanse near downtown Napa. So it's right there. Open air venues are typically associated with dog shows and craft fairs and carnivals, but it will be set up for this lavish event, they say. So there you go. Bottle Rock 2024 in Napa. It's coming up next weekend.
So big deal. A lot of performers, a lot of major acts there. So
yeah, a lot of good stuff going on there. 11:30 a.m. 10 p.m. 24th, 25th, and 26th. So there you go. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, I believe we're going to end the show here. It is May the 16th, unless you're listening to it in archives or a repeat. And we'll be back next Thursday. That's May the 23rd, and 7 p.m. Eastern time is our live time for the show. Or again, you can listen to it on the archives. And now we're on Spotify, so search for us on Spotify. A lot of people have that app, and we finally made it there.
Yes.
All 300 and something shows are on there. So,
wow.
I think it's maxed out at 300, but I'll have to check. So we have like over 600 done since the beginning, but I think there were 300 on there so far. All right. We'll go ahead and end it here. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great week tomorrow and weekend ahead. And then we'll talk to you next Thursday, and be safe. Thanks. Thanks
be
for
safe.
Being in.
Thank you for tuning in and listening. See you next week.
Yeah.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Yay! Oh, wrong end of the show. All right. Green room.